day before last, I mentioned that I would continue reading Krishna Book's description of Damodar Leela to help our absorption in this month's vow of remembering Lord Damodar and the pastime of his being tied to the mortar by his beloved Mother Yashoda. This is the 10th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam and Krishna Book, entitled The Deliverance of Nala Kuvera and Manigriva. The story of the cursing of Nala Kuvera and Manigriva and their deliverance by Krishna under the all-blissful desire of the great sage Narada is here described. The two great demigods, Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, were sons of the treasurer of the demigods, Kuvera, who was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. By the grace of Lord Shiva, Kuvera's material opulence had no limit. As a rich man's sons often become addicted to wine and women, so these two sons of Kuvera were also addicted to wine and sex. Once, these two demigods, desiring to enjoy, entered the garden of Lord Shiva in the province of Kailash, on the bank of the Mandakini Ganges. There they drank much and engaged in hearing the sweet singing of beautiful women who accompanied them in that garden of fragrant flowers. In an intoxicated condition, they both entered the waters of the Ganges, which was full with lotus flowers, and there they began to enjoy the company of the young girls, exactly as the male elephant enjoys the female elephants within the water. While they were thus enjoying themselves in the water, all of a sudden Narada, the great sage, happened to pass that way. He could understand that the demigods, Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, were too much intoxicated and could not even see that he was passing. The young girls, however, were not so much intoxicated as the demigods, and they at once became ashamed at being naked before the great sage Narada. They began to cover themselves with all haste. The two demigod sons of Kuvera were so much intoxicated that they could not appreciate the presence of the sage Narada, and therefore did not cover their bodies. On seeing the two demigods so degraded by intoxication, Narada desired their welfare, and therefore he exhibited his causeless mercy upon them by cursing them. Because the great sage was compassionate upon them, he wanted to finish their false enjoyment of intoxication and association with young girls and wanted them to see Lord Krishna face to face. He conceived of cursing them as follows. He said that the attraction for material enjoyment is due to an increase of the motive passion. A person in the material world, when favored by the material opulence of riches, generally becomes addicted to three things: intoxication, sex, and gambling. Materially opulent men, being puffed up with the accumulation of wealth, also become so merciless that they indulge in killing animals by opening slaughterhouses, and they think that they themselves will never die. Such foolish persons, forgetting the laws of nature, become overly infatuated with the body. They forget that the material body, even though very much advanced in civilization up to the position of the demigods, will finally turn into ashes or stool. And while one is living, whatever the external condition of the body may be, within there is only stool, urine, and various kinds of worms. Thus, being engaged in jealousy and violence to other bodies, materialists cannot understand the ultimate goal of life, and without knowing this goal of life, they generally glide down to a hellish condition in their next life. Such foolish persons commit all kinds of sinful activities on account of this temporary body, and they are even unable to consider whether this body actually belongs to them. Generally, it is said that the body belongs to the persons who feed the body. One might therefore consider whether the body belongs to one personally or to the master to whom one renders service. The master of slaves claims full right to the bodies of the slaves because the master feeds the slaves. It may also be questioned whether the body belongs to the father, who is the seed-giving master of this body, or to the mother, who develops the child's body in her womb. Foolish persons are engaged in committing all sorts of sins due to the misconception of identifying the material body with the self. But one should be intelligent enough to understand to whom this body belongs. A foolish person indulges in killing animals to maintain the body, but he does not consider whether his body belongs to him or to his father or mother or maternal grandfather. Sometimes a father gives his daughter in charity to a person with a view of getting back the daughter's child as a son. The body may also belong to a stronger man who forces it to work for him. Sometimes a slave's body is sold to a master, and from that day on the body belongs to the master. And at the end of life, the body belongs to the fire, because the body is given to the fire and burned to ashes. Or the body is thrown into the street to be eaten by the dogs and vultures. Before committing all kinds of sins to maintain the body, one should understand to whom the body belongs. Ultimately, it is concluded that the body is a product of material nature, and at the end it merges into material nature. Therefore, the conclusion should be that the body belongs to material nature. One should not wrongly think that the body belongs to him. To maintain a false possession, why should one indulge in killing? Why should one kill innocent animals to maintain the body? When a man is infatuated with the false prestige of opulence, he does not care for any moral instruction, but indulges in wine, women, and animal killing. In such circumstances, a poverty-stricken man is often better situated, because a poor man thinks of himself in relation to other bodies. A poor man often does not wish to inflict injuries upon other bodies, because he can understand more readily that when he himself is injured, he feels pain. As such, the great sage Narad considered that because the demigods Nalakuvera and Manigriva were so infatuated by false prestige, they should be put into a condition of life devoid of opulence. A person who has a pinprick in his body does not wish others to be pricked by pins. A considerate man in the life of poverty does not wish others to be also put into that condition. Generally, it is seen that one who has risen from a poverty-stricken life and becomes wealthy creates some charitable institution at the end of his life so that other poverty-stricken men might be benefited. In short, a compassionate poor man may consider others' pains and pleasures with empathy. A poor man is seldom puffed up with false pride, and he may be freed from all kinds of infatuation. He may remain satisfied by whatever he gets for his maintenance by the grace of the Lord. To remain in a poverty-stricken condition is a kind of austerity. According to Vedic culture, therefore, the Brahmana, as a matter of routine, keeps themselves in a poverty-stricken condition to save themselves from false prestige and material opulence. False prestige due to advancement of material prosperity is a greater impediment for spiritual emancipation. A poverty-stricken man cannot become unnaturally fat by eating more and more, and on account of not being able to eat more than he requires, his senses are not very turbulent. When the senses are not very turbulent, he cannot become violent. Another advantage of poverty is that a saintly person can easily enter a poor man's house, and thus the poor man can take advantage of the saintly person's association. A very opulent man does not allow anyone to enter to his house. Therefore, the saintly person cannot enter. According to the Vedic system, a saintly person takes the position of a mendicant so that on the plea of begging something from the householder, he can enter any house. The householder, who has usually forgotten everything about spiritual advancement because he is busy maintaining family affairs, can be benefited by the association of a saintly person. There is a great chance for the poor man to become liberated through association with a saint. Of what use are persons who are puffed up with material opulence and prestige if they are bereft of the association of saintly persons and devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? The great sage Narada therefore thought that it was his duty to put these demigods into a condition where they could not be falsely proud of their material opulence and prestige. Narada was compassionate and wanted to save them from their fallen life. They were in the mode of darkness, and being therefore unable to control the senses, they were addicted to sex life. It was the duty of a saintly person like Narada to save them from their abominable condition. In animal life, the animal has no sense to understand that he is naked. But Kuvera was the treasurer of the demigods, a very responsible man, and Nalakuvera and Manigriva were two of his sons. And yet, they became so animalistic and irresponsible that they could not understand, due to intoxication, that they were naked. To cover the lower part of the body is a principle of human civilization, and when men or women forget this principle, they become no better than animals. Narada therefore thought that the best punishment for them was to make them immovable living entities, or trees. Trees are, by nature's law, immovable. Although trees are covered by the mode of ignorance, they cannot do harm. The great sage Narada thought it fitting that, although the brothers would be punished to become trees, by his mercy they would continue to keep their memory and be able to know why they were being punished. After changing the body, a living entity generally forgets his previous life. But in special cases, by the grace of the Lord, as with Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, one can remember. Sage Narada therefore contemplated that the two demigods would remain for 100 years in the time of the demigods in the form of trees, and after that they would be fortunate enough to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face by His causeless mercy. And thus they would be again promoted to the life of the demigods and become great devotees of the Lord. After this, the great sage Narada returned to his abode, known as Narayan Ashrama, and the two demigods turned into trees, known as twin Arjuna trees. The two demigods were favored by the causeless mercy of Narada and given a chance to grow in Narada's courtyard and see Lord Krishna face to face. Although child Krishna was bound up to the wooden mortar, he began to crawl towards the twin trees in order to fulfill the prophecy of his great devotee Narada. Lord Krishna knew that Narada was his great devotee and that the trees standing before him as twin Arjuna trees were actually the sons of Kuvera. I must now fulfill the words of my great devotee Narada, he thought. Then he proceeded through the passage between the two trees. Although he was able to pass through the passage, the large wooden mortar stuck horizontally between the trees. Taking advantage of this with great strength, Lord Krishna began to pull the rope which was tied to the mortar. As soon as he pulled, the two trees, with all their branches and limbs, fell down immediately with a great sound. Out of the broken, fallen trees came two great personalities shining like blazing fire. All sides became illuminated and beautiful by their presence. The two purified personalities immediately came before child Krishna and bowed down to offer their respects and prayers in the following words. Dear Lord Krishna, you are the original personality of Godhead, master of all mystic powers. Learned brahmanas know very well that this cosmic manifestation is an expansion of your potencies, which are sometimes manifest and sometimes unmanifest. You are the original provider of the life, body, and senses of all living entities. You are the eternal God, Lord Vishnu, who is all-pervading, the imperishable controller of everything, and you are eternal time. You are the original source of the cosmic manifestation, which is acting under the spell of the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. You are living as the supersoul in all the multiforms of living entities, and you know very well what is going on within their bodies and minds. Therefore, you are the supreme director of all activities of all living entities. But, although you are in the midst of everything which is under the spell of the material modes of nature, you are not affected by such contaminated qualities. No one under the jurisdiction of the material modes can understand your transcendental qualities which existed before the creation. Therefore, you are called the Supreme Transcendence. Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto your lotus feet of you, Lord Vasudeva, the Supreme Brahman, who is always glorified by your personal internal potencies. In this material world, you make yourself known only by your different incarnations. Although you assume different types of bodies, these bodies are not part of the material creation. They are always full of the transcendental potencies of unlimited opulence, strength, beauty, fame, wisdom, and renunciation. In the material existence, there is a difference between the body and the owner of the body. But because you appear in your original spiritual body, there is no such difference for you. When you appear, your uncommon activities indicate that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such uncommon activities are not possible for anyone in material existence. You, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, cause the birth and death as well as the liberation of the living entities, and you are full with all your plenary expansions. You can bestow on everyone all kinds of benedictions. O Lord, O source of all auspiciousness and goodness, we offer our respectful obeisances unto you. You are the all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead, the supreme source of peace and the supreme personality in the dynasty of King Yadu. O Lord, our Father, known as Kuvera, the demigod, is your servant. Similarly, the great sage Narada is also your servitor, and only by their grace have we been able to see you personally. We therefore pray that we may always be engaged in your transcendental loving service by speaking only about your glories and hearing about your transcendental activities. May our hands and other lips be engaged in your service, and our minds always be concentrated at your lotus feet, and our heads always bowed before the all-pervading universal form of your lordship. When the demigods Nala Kuvera and Manigriva finished their prayers, the child Lord Krishna, the master and proprietor of Gokula, bound to the wooden grinding mortar by the ropes of Yashoda, smiled and said, "It was already known to me that my great devotee Narayana Muni had shown his causeless mercy by saving you from the abominable condition of pride due to possessing extraordinary beauty and opulence in a family of demigods. He has saved you from gliding down into the lowest condition of hellish life. All these facts are already known to me. You are very fortunate, because not only were you cursed by him, but you had the great opportunity to see him. If someone is able by chance to see face to face a great saintly person like Narada, who is always serene and merciful to everyone, then immediately that conditioned soul becomes liberated. This is exactly like being situated in the full light of the sun. There cannot be any visionary impediment. Therefore, O Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, your lives have now become successful because you have developed ecstatic love for me. This is your last birth within the material existence. Now you can go back to your father's residence in the heavenly planets, and by remaining in the attitude of devotional service, you will be liberated in this very life." After this, the demigods circumambulated the Lord many times and bowed down before him again and again, and thus they left. The Lord remained bound up with ropes to the grinding mortar. Thus ends the Bhaktivinoda purport of the 10th chapter of Krishna, the deliverance of Nala Kuvera and Manigriva. Hare Krishna.